Hello, this is Kathleen, and today, Tuesday, February 17th, I'll be reading to you from the Daily News of Newburyport. Merrimack River Watershed Council, Taking the Plunge. Third annual Winter Plunge raises funds to protect, restore the Merrimack River. Newburyport. The so-called Sturgeon King once again braved the icy Atlantic in the name of clean water over the weekend. Merrimack River Watershed Council Executive Director Kurt Rogers donned a dramatic sturgeon crown with bony plate regalia to lead a group of plungers into the frigid waters off Newbury Beach on Plum Island on Saturday afternoon. The Valentine's Day spectacle drew more than 30 supporters who met at Riptide Cafe and Bar before parading to the shoreline to cheer on the costumed crew, a news release indicates. The event raised more than $10,000 raised to protect and restore the Merrimack River. Modeled after a charity walk, participants collected pledges from friends and family in exchange for their willingness to submerge in February's near-freezing temperatures. While the scene was festive and fish-themed attire encouraged, the mission behind it remains serious. The Lawrence-based Watershed Council works year-round to safeguard the river that protects drinking water to more than 60,000 people and supports 2.5 million residents across the watershed. From combating pollution to addressing the accelerating impacts of climate change, MRWC advocates for science-based solutions that protect both the wildlife and the communities that depend on this vital resource, the release reads. Saturday's event marked the third annual Winter Plunge, and enthusiasm continues to grow each year. This year, we had over a 50% increase in fundraising and costumes, Rogers said, as participants prepared to plunge with cocktails in hand. After the dip, participants warmed up back at the Riptide Cafe, where stories were shared. Fingers slowly regained feeling. Plans for next year's plunge were already underway. For those who missed the splash but would like to still contribute, donations remain open at https://www.paypal.com/donate/?HOSTED_button_ID=RHJPQ34AYFJQY. Snow Removal Waste Workshop Among Topics by Matt Petrie, Newburyport. Mayor Sean Reardon touched on a recent zero waste workshop and snow removal over a variety of other topics during his Mayor's Corner update posted to the city's Facebook last Thursday. Reardon attended the Alliance of Climate and Environmental Stewards, ACES, first of three Waste Watchers workshops held on February 11th, promoting the state's 2030-2050 waste initiative. Representatives from municipal departments and commissions met at the Parker River Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center in Newbury to expand and develop programs to reduce solid waste. Communities involved include Newburyport, Amesbury, Salisbury, Merrimack, Groveland, Newbury, Rowley, and West Newbury. I thought it was incredibly well run today. We had good speakers. We had speakers from DEP there, Reardon said during his Mayor's Corner video. We had good speakers and then we had good breakouts after that. The workshop allowed for time to think about the important questions. Are there other opportunities in times that we're living in, where there are tough budgets and tough decisions that we have to make? He asked. Are there opportunities to partner more regionally on things like waste reduction? Because the cost of our trash keeps going up, up, and up. Are there things around there that we can do? Reardon also said a lot of quality conversations were had. I thought it was a really great effort all around, he said. In a statement from ACES, Amesbury Mayor Cassandra Gove, who attended with the city's conservation agent Amanda Armington and energy manager DJ Johnson, said she enjoyed the workshop for the big picture and small detail conversations among colleagues and experts. I was able to take statewide goals and data and work with my team on measurable and realistic steps for our community, she said. The more I learn, the better I can communicate our priorities and develop strategies for change. Many thanks to everyone who shared their expertise that day. ACES volunteer Lindsay Haight has been facilitating the workshops. In ACES' statement, she said her greatest takeaway was the energy in the room. As we move through this series, our next challenge is bringing the private sector together to help. She said, waste reduction happens at the human level, whether you are at home, walking downtown, or building your place of business. The next meeting is set for March 11th at the same location, with the goal of bringing together current and potential private sector collaborators who are already working on solid waste management and reduction, or have unique experience and opportunity to support the municipalities in their efforts through convening and guiding action among residents or businesses. We would love to have the region's chambers of commerce, churches, and private books, schools join us for workshop two, Haight said. We also welcome people who are passionate about this cause and are ready to be their neighborhood or town champion. Earlier in his video address, Reardon touched upon recent snow removal efforts and the parking bans that have gone with them. We are getting some emails questioning the bans and things like that, he said. So I guess what I'll say is this. The parking bans help the DPHS do their job. Reardon noted how city is still working to get all of the snow from the massive storm at the end of January that dropped 27 inches on the community. You can still walk around town and see most of the snow is still there because it has been so cold, he said. Moving forward, he said that if the snow does not completely melt, it will likely fall to the city to call for an emergency parking ban if plowing is needed. I completely get that it is an inconvenience for some folks, Reardon said. I understand that it is tough for businesses, sometimes as well. Like, for instance, today, we were able to take it off by 10 a.m. so that hopefully that didn't affect really anybody downtown. But that's just where we are right now because of the amount of snow we have received. Addressing the efforts of DPS to handle all the snow, Reardon had nothing but praise. We're getting much more positive calls into City Hall than negative calls, which is really great to see because I think the crew is working extremely hard and they're putting a lot of effort into communicating everything else to the public in a thoughtful way, too. So kudos to the DPS. Series pilot about Salem wins award by Michael McHugh, staff writer. Salem. Local comedian Ali DeFranco recently debuted the pilot episode of her comedy series, Witch City, taking home multiple awards from the NYC TV Festival for her showcase of the fast-growing comedy scene in Salem. DeFranco who moved to Salem 6 years ago, is locally recognized as a major driving force behind the creation of Salem's comedy scene over the past 3 years. Beginning at Gulu Gulu Cafe and eventually expanding to other venues such as Satanic Temple, Hallowed Ground, and Bit Bar, DelFranco's Witch City Comedy Group, which she says has hosted more than 500 comedians since its inception 3 years ago, now holds more than 250 comedy events a year across 20 Salem venues. It started out as such a cliche open mic, where we had no audience and a weekly heckler. It was very bare bones comedy, DelFranco said. So I just started knocking on different venues' doors and saying, give me your slowest night. And I kept inviting more comics. It's really grown over the past 3 years. And now we have our own scene. Comedians from all over the country are messaging me to tell me they're coming to Salem. It's really cool. According to Misha Trubbs, who has been performing in Salem in recent years, the city's comedy scene exploded since the early days of open mics at Gulu Gulu. There wasn't much comedy going on, but then all of a sudden it popped up, and it was just too much in my face for me not to participate, Trubbs said. When it started out at Gulu Gulu, it was mostly music, so you kind of had to be loud and make yourself present for anyone to hear your awful jokes. But fortunately, things have grown here thanks to Allie, who sort of single-handedly made it all happen. Comedians such as DelFranco say the Salem comedy scene sets itself apart from other communities in its openness and to new voices and comics taking creative risks, as well as a constantly rotating audience base thanks to the city's tourism industry. It's very friendly and welcoming scene, DelFranco said. If you go to an open mic in New York City or LA, a lot of the people in the audience are comics themselves. I think one of the biggest differences we have here is the tourism. We can take advantage of the people here, the culture, and the witch hats, and that's really helped me shape the brand. Chris Leadham, a lifelong Salem resident, said part of the local comedy scene's charm is the uniqueness of each comedian's style, something he's excited to bring to writing sessions for future episodes of the TV series. People just take a little bit more risk as far as your standard setup punchline type of comedy, he said. And just as a whole, the community really works together. It's a warmer vibe here. Now we're all going to start writing and coming up with ideas for the series very soon, and everyone's allowed to be as creative and free with it as they want to be. The pilot episode of Witch City follows aspiring comic Bridget, played by DelFranco, who moves to Salem from New York, working to make ends meet at a tour guide business, restaurants, and other local venues, in hopes of eventually kickstarting her comedy career. Future episodes are planned to have multiple intersecting storylines and characters, showcasing stories from popular Salem locales. I'm so excited because I'm such a Salem nerd, DelFranco said. We have things like Hocus Pocus and some horror movies that have been filmed here, but no one has really tackled Salem yet. From the local perspective, showing what it's really like to live here. So I call it a love letter to the locals. Having worked with various local venues to combine their regular offerings with a comedy show, such as tickets to shows at the Satanic Temple, also providing access to the Salem Art Gallery, DelFranco has come to know many of the local business leaders and employees who make Salem the destination it is. The Salem Comedy Crawl, an event that Witch City Comedy started, sees 50 comics running around to 5 different local venues in a single night, with 3-minute sets packed in a tight into an hour-long performance. As the Satanic Temple, which started hosting Witch City Comedy last spring, managers and curator of the Salem Art Gallery, Hannah Catherine, said that DelFranco's dedication to growing the local scene and having comedians from out of state fly into Salem has led to rising popularity. "It's been amazing. Allie brings in comedians from New York and out of state, and getting these more well-known names from areas where she was starting her comedy career," Catherine said. "It's been great having them here, and everyone is so accepting of the venue being the Satanic Temple. You would think some of the comedians from further away might be weirded out, but they're all really excited to be here." Now, DelFranco, in addition to shooting scenes at recognizable local businesses and venues, is hoping to give local businesses an opportunity to contribute to the writing process to produce a script that is authentic to life in Salem. "I wrote the full pilot, but we're having our first writers' meeting in a week, and we're going to be pitching ideas that have a spotlight on different venues," she said. "For example, we'll talk to Kelly Homan, who owns Red's Sandwich Shop, for an episode where Bridget works at Red's, which is a very fast-paced spot. And she gets fired from there along with a bunch of other businesses. So we'll invite workers into the writer's room and ask, what are some horror stories? Or how can we get the dialogue accurate? For the next version of the pilot, I'm also definitely going to work closer with the local film community here," she said. "Because when you're trained in TV writing, production isn't the number one focus. The focus is the script and the dialogue. So it's going to be cool to collaborate." While the full pilot is planned to be showcased with a special screening, most likely at Cinema Salem in the first week of April, the first pilot has already received a great reception at the New York City TV Festival, where it won an award for Best TV Show in a Comedy and Best Actress in a Comedy. "We shot the pilot in just 4 days," DelFranco said. "And I think one people over is the fact that it's really just felt so real. It really shows when something is based on real life experiences, and Salem is such a loving community." You can find out more about Witch City Comedy at Instagram.com/Witch City Comedy. "As I See It, America's Accented President" by Jack Garvey. Took a long while to stop laughing at Caroline Leavitt's snarling claim that no one could be an American citizen while also being a citizen of another country. Did her boss decree that dual citizenship, like affordability, is a Democratic hoax? Was Melania really born and raised in Chagrin Falls, Ohio? When I did stop laughing, I learned that one American president spoke English as a second language. So says one Pennsylvania historian who better be careful. That's a hard sell now that speaking anything other than English can get you picked up by ICE, processed through alligator Alcatraz, and shipped off to a country you haven't seen since your baby teeth fell out. If they are banning books describing Andrew Jackson as anything but a devoted friend to native tribes, there's no way that they'll allow that one of his disciples and his successor spoke Dutch with family and close friends, and with a distinct Dutch accent spoke English only when he had to. Our eighth president, Martin Van Buren, was our first from New York. And before it was New York, it was New Amsterdam. How Ronald Reagan, son of Scotch-Irish stock in downstate Illinois, got the nickname Dutch is anyone's guess. Yes, Van Buren was born 150 years after the colonial flags changed, but languages, customs, and cuisines always remain. That is especially true up in the Hudson, where Dutch names decorate every map. Many restaurants serve Dutch entrees, which for Poughkeepsians are grateful to this day, or at least were until 2000 when my daughter graduated from Vassar. Chris, whose podcast gives only his first name, tells us that Van Buren in Het Netherlands spoke no English until attending school at age 7. But he learned fast, becoming one of the great orators of the Jacksonian era, a skill that Jackson lacked. With it, Van Buren enabled his boss, the presidency's first outsider, to maneuver government, personnel, and agencies. Van Buren served as president from 1837 to 1841. The economy tanked in 37 and was still tanked in 40 when the Whigs nominated a war hero, William Henry Harrison, who whooped them. 8 years later, a newly formed Free Soil Party nominated Van Buren for president with Charles Adams, grandson and son of the two Johns, as his running mate. Quite an about-face for a disciple of Old Hickory who had nothing but open contempt for John Quincy. The odd couple landed just 10% of the vote. Van Buren's tricks, as critics and supporters alike called them, earned him the nickname Little Magician. One can only wonder if a heavy Dutch accent added to his mystique, a la Henry Kissinger's German accent in the Nixon White House. For Chris's podcast, Ignored Facts, Van Buren's story serves as an intro to a strong case for America to retain its diversity of languages. Bilingualism, after all, has never hurt a job applicant. As Chris emphasizes, native languages, as well as Spanish and those of the earliest settlers, were there before the U.S. borders reached them. He has my admiration. That's an even harder sell in a land where some people grumble over having to press one for English, or is it for having to tolerate anything other than English? Chris does steer clear of the controversial theory, or the hunch, of a few historians and of novelist Gore Vidal that Van Buren was the illegitimate son of Aaron Burr. His parents ran an inn along the Hudson that Burr frequented in transit to Albany. No smoking gun, as Burr saved that for Hamilton. But Van Buren's dad was a hopeless alcoholic, his mother by all accounts attractive, and Burr a womanizer. Dates match, as did their obsidian eyes. Chris does mention that Van Buren was the first president born in the United States. All the Virginians and Bay Staters preceding him were born British citizens, as was Jackson in the Carolinas' Waxhaw region. I'd give my winter supply of Rip Van Schroopwafels to hear Caroline Levitt make nonsense out of that. Press 1 for Jack Garvey at hamlin@gmail.com or at buskersdelight.home.blog. Love is in the air. Anna Jake's newborns pose for Valentine's Day photos by Caitlin D. Newburyport. Valentine's Day became extra special for the parents of newborn babies at Anna Jake's Hospital. In anticipation of Valentine's Day, staff at Anna Jake's took the time to dress up newborns in festive, adorable holiday gear, from pink tutus to red and pink hats. From the Anna Jake's Birth Center to the Neonatal Care Unit, precious babies got to celebrate their first Valentine's Day in style. Maternal Child Health Director Allison Sikelski said the team at the hospital gets ready for the holidays in advance, giving families a chance to take sweet, festive photos of their babies. We start prepping a few days before each holiday, whatever holiday it is, Valentine's Day, Halloween, whatever. Depending on what it is, we get some costumes, some props, and get ready to dress up some babies of any families who are interested, she said. Sikelski said spending holidays and special occasions like Valentine's Day with patients and their families allows them to build a strong bond with hospital staff. I enjoy working at a community hospital, and I know the staff do too, because you really treat your patients like they're your friends and your family, and part of that is celebrating the holidays, she said. Sikalski also said taking the time to getting the babies ready for their close-ups and celebrating the holiday brings families joy. It also inspires many families to return to Anna Jakes after positive experiences like these. It gives the families a lot of fun memories. Many of our families come back here to deliver their second, third babies, and so forth. When they come back, the staff greet them like they're long-lost friends, and we enjoy any opportunity to have fun, just like you would with family and friends, she said. Anna Jakes Hospital is part of the Beth Israel Lahey Health. The hospital is an 83-bed, not-for-profit community hospital serving the Merrimack Valley, North Shore, and Southern New Hampshire. MSPCA Angel adapts outreach operations, Boston. 3 months after MSPCA Angel's community outreach teams pivoted to help community members affected by the freeze of the federal SNAP benefits, they are again responded to an unprecedented situation, the increased presence of Immigration and Customs Enforcement in Massachusetts. Right now, many of our neighbors are afraid to leave their homes, and we don't know when that will change, explained MSPCA Angel Vice President of Animal Protection, Mike Keeley. What we do know is that when people are at risk, their pets are too. As an animal welfare organization, we know it's our responsibility to help pets in need. So we have to change how we do things to ensure that those animals are able to get the supplies and care they need, even when their humans don't feel safe leaving their home, Keeley added. If people do not feel comfortable attending regularly scheduled pet food pantries, other large events, or one of the MSPCA Angel locations, the community's outreach teams will work with them to ensure that they're able to receive necessary resources. When people reach out to us, we'll assess how best to help them, whether that means meeting them individually, getting supplies delivered, or helping with transportation should their pets need medical care. Anyone who needs help is asked to visit mspca.org/outreach to connect with a team in their area. MSPCA Angel is seeking volunteers to help in these expanded operations. We have no idea what kind of a response we'll get for these services, so we may need a lot of help to ensure we'll be able to reach out to everyone who needs us, Kylie added. That could mean making deliveries, transporting animals, or sorting supplies. We just don't know at this point. Those interested in volunteering are asked to sign up at mspca.org/covolunteer. Keeley asks that anyone able to donate send supplies from mspca.org/wishlist or give at mspca.org/codonate. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you all have a safe and well day.